message for the day, and we'll have communion after this. Harrison, if you want to head off to Kids Kingdom. Begin reading in verse 1, and while you're turning, let's talk a little bit about what's leading up to this chapter. So, John chapter 8, verses 1 through 11, Jesus is essentially rebuking the Pharisees and their self-righteousness, and that they were about to stone a woman for supposed adultery. And in a critical verse that's going to tie us into John 9, it's verse 12, where he states, "I am the light of the world, and whoever follows me will have the light of life." So throughout this chapter, Jesus just continues to expose the Jewish leaders that they are so focused in the darkness of others, when he's continuing to show them to focus on their own sin or darkness and self-righteousness, and rather follow him or the light. So let's go ahead and pick up in chapter 9. We'll start off reading in verse 1. "As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?' 'Neither this man nor his parents sinned,' said Jesus, 'but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world.' After saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. 'Go,' he told him, 'wash in the pool of Siloam.' This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, 'Isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg?' Some claimed that he was. Others said, 'No, he only looks like him.' But he himself insisted, 'I am the man.' 'How then were your eyes open?' he asked, or they asked. He replied, 'The man they call Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and then I could see.' 'Where is this man?' they asked him. 'I don't know,' he said. They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been blind. Now the day on which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes was a Sabbath. Therefore the Pharisees also asked him, how he had received his sight. 'He put mud in my eyes,' the man replied, 'and I washed, and now I see.' Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath.' But others asked, 'How can a sinner perform such signs?' So they were divided. Then they turned again to the blind man. 'What have you to say about him?' 'It was your eyes he opened,' the man replied. 'He is a prophet.' They still did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they sent for the man's parents. 'Is this your son?' they asked. 'Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that now he can see?' 'We know he is our son,' the parents answered, 'and we know he was born blind. But how he can see now or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself.' His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders, who had already had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. That was why his parents said, 'He is of age, ask him.' A second time they summoned the man who had been blind. 'Give glory to God by telling the truth,' they said. 'We know this man is a sinner.' He replied, 'Whether he is a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see.' Then they asked him, 'What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?' He answered, 'I have told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too?' Then they hurled insults at him and said, 'You are his fellow's disciple.' we are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but as far as this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from. The man answered, now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. To this they replied, you were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, and when he found him, he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? Who is he, sir? The man asked. Tell me so that I may believe. Jesus said, you have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you. Then the man said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind. Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, what, are we blind too? Jesus said, if you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains. So the story of Jesus and the blind man. Jesus had just slipped away in chapter 8 from the Pharisees before they were about to stone him. The sense of this text was that Jesus was not shaken or disturbed by the violence in chapter 8. The first part of this chapter is giving a lot of good context into understanding the situation that Jesus was in and the mindset of the disciples. So let's first gain some historical context into the scene that we are reading about here, because there's a lot going on. We read a few different scenes, and it's important to understand the context that of what we're reading. So John is describing the blind man, and the disciples are curious as to what Jesus' thoughts are on why the man is afflicted with blindness. This question stems from Jewish tradition, or thinking that those born with afflictions were caused by sin. Sin of the parents, or their own sin, perhaps in the womb. Sometimes birth defects and other handicap conditions can be from sinful behavior of the parents. However, far more often, and in the case Jesus spoke of here, it is due simply to sin and our fallen condition in general, not due to any specific sin. The sin of Adam set the principle of death and its associated destruction in the world, and we've had to deal with it ever since. So in verse 6, when he said, when he said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And he said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam. So he went and washed and came back seeing. So let's look at where it says he spat on the ground and made clay with saliva. Jesus used what was undoubtedly one of his more unusual methods leading to a miracle. So we can suppose that Jesus wanted to emphasize at least two things. Just as God used the dust of the ground and clay to do a work of creation in Genesis, so Jesus did a work of creation with dust and clay for this man. Jesus found it important to change his methods of healing so one could never make a formula of the methods. What he is really showing the Jews was the power of God, not any method. The emphasis of John seems to be on compassion rather than creation. The touch of a friendly hand would be reassuring. The weight of the clay would serve as an indicator to the blind man that something had been done to him, and it would be inducive to obey Jesus' command. An additional important cultural note that what seems so strange to us, using saliva as a medicine on the eyes, was actually not so strange in the ancient world. Saliva, and especially saliva of some distinguished persons, was believed to possess certain medicinal qualities. In the book of Mark, recorded two other healings that Jesus performed with the use of his saliva, and that's in Mark chapter 7 and chapter 8. So let's look at where Jesus told the man to go wash in the pool of Siloam. The water for the pool of Siloam came through Hezekiah's tunnel, a remarkable engineering feat built in Old Testament times. It was called Siloam, which it was said meant sent, because the water in it had been sent through the conduit into the city. So on the screen behind us, these are two pictures of the Pool of Siloam as it was discovered within the 20th century. On the right is more of an early 20th century, and on the left is more later on in the 20th century. As you can see, it would take some faith to make your way, as a blind man, make your way down to the Pool of Siloam. It's not the pool that maybe we think of, maybe even a river that we would think of as going down and washing in at that time. The Pool of Siloam, it was from the Siloam stream that had drawn the water, which was poured over the great altar at the Feast of Tabernacles in the past, which pouring out was regarded by the rabbis as typical of the pouring out of the Spirit in the Old Law. So again, the Pool of Siloam does not look like a pool you and I would think of, or anything that you would consider walking to or washing in. Jesus knew that going down to the pool is no small feat. And for a blind man, well, it would take a lot of faith. The faith and obedience of the blind man is what we're talking about this morning. His faithfulness in allowing Jesus to put saliva and mud on his face, the obedience to trek down to the Pool of Siloam, and in the end, becoming a believer and follower of Christ, sharing of his miraculous stories with others. So we're going to hit on three steps to ensure we are abiding in the light of Christ. Step number one, steps of obedience. As a blind man followed Christ's instructions in order to be healed, we must also do what Christ instructs so that we may be able to see as well. In this miracle, Jesus took all the initiative. Jesus came to the blind man. The blind man did not come to him. So even so, he expected the blind man to respond with faith-filled action. The healing would not happen unless the man responded with those faith-filled, obedient actions. Not many people would appreciate having mud made with spit rubbed in their eyes. Some would look at how Jesus did this miracle and object, so saying that it was offensive, inadequate, or even harmful to rub mud with spit in a man's eyes. So with that, we must trust Christ in order to know Christ. In the same way, some feel that the gospel is offensive. It is true that it may offend a man's pride and human wisdom, but it pleased God through the foolishness of the message, meaning Christ's crucifixion, which was preached to save those who believe in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. In the same way, some feel that the gospel is inadequate, but have all the psychiatric and political and social programs in the world done more good than the life-changing gospel of Jesus Christ? In the same way, some feel that the gospel is harmful, that the free offer of grace in Jesus will cause people to sin, that grace may abound. But the gospel changes our life for the good and the pure, not into wickedness. So let's look at steps of discovery. That would be our second step here. So in the part of the scripture that we read where it says, so he went and washed. This took faith. Even when Jesus did not promise the blind man sight in doing this, it was really implied, but the man acted on faith, even in the implied promise of Jesus. We must step into the light so Jesus can do good through us. Still, as a blind man, he had to find his way down to the Pool of Siloam and down its steps to the pool itself. He likely could think of a dozen reasons why this was a fool's errand. But he went and washed in faith and obedience because Jesus told him to, and because there's also mud in his eyes. He came back seeing. That's the part of the scripture where this is the first time in biblical record a person born blind was healed of their blindness. From Genesis to John to no prophet, priest, or apostle ever gave sight to someone born blind. Since healing blind eyes is the work of the Lord, it shows that Jesus is God. The Lord opens the eyes of the blind, as it says in Psalms 146. Opening the eyes of the blind was prophesied to be a work of the Messiah. The eyes of the blind shall be opened, as it says in Isaiah 35. as the impotent man of chapter 5 in John, cured after his 38 years of sickness, may be viewed as a type of the Jews who are yet to be healed. So may this man of chapter 9, blind from birth, be viewed as a type of the Gentiles whose healing was about to begin and who were about to believe into Jesus as him who was sent, the sent from God. So down in verse 35, we witness the opening of the heart of the blind man. It says, Jesus heard that they cast him out, and when he had found him, he said to him, Do you believe in the Son of God? And he answered and said, Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? And Jesus said to him, You have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you. Then he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. The religious leaders rejected the man who Jesus healed. Jesus then made it a point to meet him and receive him. It hurts to be rejected by others, but God has consolation for us in Jesus. Jesus called on the healed man to fully believe, and he did. As he said, Lord, I believe. When the healed man declared his loyalty to Jesus by not denying him before the hostile religious leaders, he was rewarded when Jesus revealed more of himself to him. As he says, you have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you. The question, do you believe in the Son of Man, is a summons of commitment. The Greek pronoun sou, which means you, used with the verb believe, makes that question twice as emphatic. It demanded a personal decision in the face of opposition and rejection. So we must guard ourselves from spiritual blindness so that we can continue our steps of discovery that are guided by Christ. Some things to look out for that may indicate spiritual blindness. God's miracles aren't miraculous anymore. Our hearts may be hardened by life's troubles to overlook the daily miracles that God performs in our lives. Or maybe you see others sin, but not your own. We may be like the Pharisees in chapter 8, blind to our own sin. Only the light, or Jesus, can open our hearts to see our sin. Another sign of spiritual blindness is you have an unteachable spirit. Again, a hardened heart or zealous pride can get in the way of others trying to shine the light in our lives. Or maybe when you're in the light, it hurts. When you're with those that are in the light and it doesn't feel that great. Those trying to share their faith and their hearts with you causes you to distance yourself from them. Some of the things we discover when we take steps to open our hearts. The religious leader said to the former blind man, You can't worship with us at the temple. As he was excommunicated, Jesus said, I will receive your worship. When the man worshiped Jesus, Jesus received the worship. This is something that no man or angel in the Bible does. The fact that Jesus accepted this worship is another proof that Jesus was from God, and that Jesus is God. The healed blind man showed an increasing awareness of Jesus. Some of the things you can pull from John chapter 9 is that Jesus is a man, John 9:11. Jesus is a prophet, John 9:17. Jesus is my master and I am his disciple, John 9:27. Jesus is from God, John 9:33. Jesus is the Son of God, John 9:35-38. And Jesus is who I trust and who I worship, John 9:38. So the third and I would say final step, but the final step of this lesson, the steps of sharing. It is important as we are healed by God, we are able to share what Jesus has done in our lives and what that really looks like. Jesus may not have put saliva and mud over your eyes to make you see, but it is important to share how his word has healed us, how his love has healed us. It's important to allow others to see the journey of radical change in your life. So what did your journey look like going down to the pool of Siloam? Many of us had radically different lives before following Christ. For those that are in the darkness, it is important that we abide in the light and that we remember how we got there so that we can help others, help show others the way. We must share compassion for those in the darkness. Jesus dealt with this man differently than most. He met his physical need first, then allowed him to endure persecution, then called him to a specific belief. It's good to remember that God may work differently in different lives. It's important to remember, however, that Christ's compassion led to the blind man's healing. Being able to put yourself in the other person's shoes to understand their perspective and to truly listen is paramount to showing compassion, sharing compassion for them. So, as I start to close this out, I want to highlight that not only did Christ heal a blind man, but his miracle also impacted the hundreds or thousands who knew of the blind man. The blind man was now abiding in the light, shining a new path for others. The Bible doesn't say how his life ended. However, in verse 39, it says that Jesus came into the world so that the blind will see, those blinded by sin, and those who will see, will become blind, or blind to sin. So let's make sure we follow the steps to be in the light. The light that Jesus shines for us, and that we continue to shine the light for others. Thank you.